All right, good morning, everyone. And yesterday, I talked about a story usually from a single case analysis, one measurement. We call individual gene case analysis. So today, because some of you are physicists and used to the big number of big space stories, so today I try to talk something about a bigger story based on a lot of measurement in the gene. So the topic today, I try to talk about how often a new gene enter a species or enter individual genome. And I'll try to describe a pattern which shows different from in different kind of organisms that might tell something about biology. And so as I said, we define a new gene as in certain kind of version time, a new gene occur, suddenly appear. And the other day we talked about that. So today, I just said the one is how often new gene enter a species, and also its variation among different organisms, which might be correlated with their lifestyle. And I will talk about copy number variation, which tell the difference between the gene number between among different individuals, between you and me, among so that kind of stuff. And definition of a duplication is, or at the DNA level, you can have either tandem duplication or dispersed, right? Meaning that you jump to the distant location in the genome at the DNA level, which is more often appearing than RNA at the RNA level. We call the reciprocation. You always have involved in the intermediate, like RNA, then that rely on the reverse transcriptase. So the frequency in nature, in the species level, that the total number of duplication at DNA level usually is about 8 to 10 times of as many at the RNA level. So that's a big picture we have that are measured by several group and who usually from my lab, right now around their group. So the top one is, we find in Drosophila melanogaster subgroup. Sub means that there are about 9 species which diverged and radiated 9 million years ago. Their rate, new generation rate, and a special mechanism we observe by analyze the group of the gene to see how the duplicates created. So this is a paper we published this year. Talk about that story. I let's review what we did the other day. We defined this first new gene called the Jingwei. It's appear in 3 African Drosophila species called the Jingwei. Jingwei, this one and this one. I just call that before we end it to more work. And I repeat to see that the new gene, they have typical chimeric structure. Why I'm interested in chimeric structure? Because such a gene usually offer a novel biological function or biochemical function than its parental gene, because the structure and also the function not simply adaptation of the function of two parents. They usually evolve different type of what we really call novel function. That's the key of evolution biology, how the new function came. So we did this kind of experiment. How many experiments we did? My former poster extended the experiment to about 7,000 experiments. So each experiment, I mean, we label 7,000 CDA, which is randomly sampled from the Drosophila melanogaster genome, then label them with fluorescence, hybridized, again, parting on such experiment, we did about 7,000. Total, we generated about 110,000 primary images. So each one you can create the image, you know whether the new genetic signal or not. So we did that experiment for quite several years, about 6 to 8 years we complete experiment. After that, we are able to mapping all this recently evolved new gene, like in this kind of final genetic tree in the part 3 evolution time by the inference we observe. So like in this one, where in this group total, we observe this many new genes, and the top one is parental gene structure, and the lower one is that the new gene structure, we brought the one exon introns for that kind of structure. So we see the distribution, right? I have a first picture of how the gene distributed in this weird, highly dissolved phylogenetic structure that can provide us.
Yeah, so this technique of chromosome fish hybridization, you would miss tandem duplication, right?
Yeah.
So you don't know very deeply. You wouldn't be able to detect that you have a double, twice as much signal, for example.
Okay. All right. So does that mean to say, yeah, it should be there, the probe we use for Madagascar. Yeah, that's what you said, it is real like this one. But then we also analyze the different genomes. So I'm going to tell that story, make it simple for more and more complex story. Anyway, this first picture that in the detail small phylogeny, we have idea how often the gene appear and that kind of stuff. So total, we identify about 34 new genes in this kind of technology, divided by the total length of the phylogeny in terms of million years. So we're able to compute about per million year per genome, get about 1.7 new gene there, so in this kind of phylogeny. And this is one type of phylogeny, but we didn't test other kind of new gene like by virtual transposon, you know, that other kind of mechanism. So this one kind of mechanism, so you want to multiply the number by like a number of A to get total gene distribution in the phylogeny. Compared to we human beings who are in mammal is that the Henrik, right, I was a professor in the University of Lausanne. He left my lab 6 years ago. He measured in the human case per million year per genome about new retro gene fixed in our genome per million years. And so that's about the speed. Then also even think about other kind of mechanism you want on the model number maybe by 10, something like that. So that's what we know right now. I want to tell you that by analyzing this group of new genes, the flanking sequence, we identify something I think interesting. That is, we're looking, so that we identify, say, like a new gene there, and we also identify one of the parental genes there, and then we expanded the sequence to both sides. Then we find something interesting, that is, in the immediate 5' set, we put a 5' breakpoint because you align the sequence together and go, so between this one, you can realign together. So we see that about there are two transferable elements. They are almost highly similar, if not identical. I mean, the first transferable element is we call SAR-DM. This is one kind of transferable element. In this side, I use the arrow point out that transferable has direction in this sequence. Then in the new gene, you also kind of transferable element in this side, right, the flanking there. Then you align those transferable element sequences, they're just, you see, almost no difference, AGCCG, AGCCG, so highly similar. So total, I mean, similarity or identity is 91.5, so 92% of similar. Suggest that this two transferable element have a common sister, some source of seed sequence. They shoot them in this way and this way. So that's the first case we observe. Then the second new gene, here I show you, we observe a number of even like this, even more dramatic. So this is parental gene, this is a new gene, and they're very highly similar, just evolving in recent, a few million years. You're looking at the flanking sequence. They also have a repetitive sequence in there, this two. This one called the DNA rip one. It's one of the most common DNA level transfer element go there. And this one is also same gene family, different type. So they are linked, tightly linked to the gene there, like this, you look at the sequence there. So this transfer element sequence read like this. And this one read like this, the orientation to this way. But beyond that, then no similarity. So you know that this same similarity, some kind of seed transfer element, the shooting node sequence in this two side there. And
what's the similarity of the
similarity means total number of nucleotide, how many nucleotides are identical?
No, I mean the other side, the three
points. Oh, you mean this one, this two?
Yeah, in the lower one. similarities.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. Oh, okay. So here it is about, this is similarity, right? And this is similar, it's also very high, 97.1%.
I mean, the figure of A, the other part, the
figure, which way?
Three points.
Okay.
Do we have high similarity sequence in that?
Oh, case? No, we don't. We don't find, see, in this case, we only find one orientation. This one, we find a two case like this. So the similarity, this one is 97.1% in this stretch of the sequence. This one is about, 88.9%, so highly similar. Now we checking the sequence we're able to observe. Yeah, all this new gene, this side, 5-point side, the flanking, this kind of element, sometimes, most often, they're pair between parental gene and new gene. In 3-point side, we also see the similar kind of case. Then there is an observation that we found, if the age of genes are older, then you'll see that the transmitter element secondary also become degenerate. So i.e. there's strong correlation between transmitter element and the new gene. So then we think this one suggests one kind of mechanism to create a new gene duplicate. And I will tell some genetic about that. So assume, so this is a model we created based on observation to interpret how this new gene is created. Assume there are two genes in two different chromosomes, one and two. Each one consists of two exons. Then if there is a transmitter element, or equal to a repetitive sequence, and landed somehow one in the intron, other one in the flanking region of the sequence. So then, because the two sequences are highly similar, so they can initiate a special term called homologous recombination. Because the sequence is similar, so it would be easy for certain form of recombination would happen. Obviously, the number of form, we right now know that one of the form is more likely. That means there is a possibility that the sort of kind of combination go because sequences seem they can align together, so they can combine, go this way, and there they can duplicate it by replication manner, put this exon back to this chromosome. So in this way, we're eventually going to create a sort kind of exon and join these two exons to form kind of standard kind of chimeric gene or new gene duplicate, or make new gene duplicate in this one. So then this is chimeric gene. If no gene there, then they make kind of new gene duplicate copy. So we think that proposed a model. However, this model is not simply you call it double strand breaking. I briefly go over there. You might not be interested. The lion's sort kind of gene conversion mechanism can create this one. You don't understand this like kind of crossover. Crossover means double strand breaking. Crossover usually happen like in a single case, but by what like the early day of genetic like merging or breaking, kind of people already observed that the two crossover is less likely to happen in a very short distance because interference is very strong. Therefore, that's not likely. We really talk about a few kb. Rather, sort of kind of replication model, for example, like this double joint DNA in this chromosome, they can become a loose. Then if a single joint breakage, so one joint DNA can invade it to this chromosome, because this one becomes loose. So this kind of replication is going to happen. They take off the strand of the DNA replicated, and then synthesize it. So otherwise, after that, the replication is going to make this strand of DNA come back, and the second strand is replicated. So that's one of the models actually proposed early day in 2003 and the last year, and the colleague in Paris was proposed similar kind of picture. So that's what we found. So polarization for log function, so that's what we observe. Of course, we also consider a number of other alternative. I think this one is most likely. So right now I talk about, give you some picture about how often new gene enter the Drosophila genome in recent evolution time. Right now, let measure what different among different Drosophila individual in terms of their copy number or the duplication, absent or present, how big the genetic variation caused by that type of the absent or present of the genes. So that's a new level of correlation. Anyway, so this did by one or two grad students in my lab, and one already graduated, other one right now still in the lab. And so by their work. Before I talk about this, I always like to emphasize that every species consists of a lot of individuals. Some species have fewer number, and some people have more individual number. For example, mankind might have 20,000 individual effective population size. Drosophila may have a million. So that reminds that concept a lot. Most often, people use a topological idea view of the species. So assume in some evolution time, a species have this many individuals. Then some duplicated copy, new duplicate appear in, say, this individual, so then I become the other one. Then that copy, by mating or by reproduction, going to pass to next generation. Next generation then might be increased if they are advantageous, do something good. They might be like mutual, just where a certain kind of rare proportion of mutant persist in the population for a while, for some time. And later on, when the new gene evolution happened, that means all the new gene duplicate copy there, they spread all the individual in some like generation later. Depends upon the selection coefficient or intensity. Eventually, every individual have the gene, so we say, well, our evolution happened. A new gene get a fix, become standard state of the genome. So that is the picture we need to talk before I talk about this work. Now two questions related about that. How many gene duplicates are there in an individual? Right? In the early day, we can talk about, you know, this particular gene have one duplicate copy, that copy have, you know, one less copy. And so right now, the progress of genomic science allow us to ask this question in an individual, how many on the total in the genome? Second question, which is more relevant to evolution biology, that what evolutionary force is a new gene duplicate copy subject to? What force govern the fixation of spread over in natural population? So that two questions we try to ask. To answer first question, we rely on a short kind of device. Right now, in America, people make all kind of technology. That's one of the recent technology created several years ago, called the tiling array. Tiling array means that in a very small, the array, then we can synthesize across the entire genome, because for some of the gather entire DNA genome sequence are known. So we can cross the genome sequence like DNA every, say, 5 to 35 base pair, we create an oligon like 25 nucleotide long, which have identical sequence to the genome. So each one we created, so each one can overlap with each other like a tidy in the house. So virtually that means we created an oligon, we cover entire genome, fix them in short kind of microarray. Meanwhile, the technology also said that it's a perfect match. So in this kind of little error, you put about tens of thousands of oligos inside to stick to that error. It's a perfect match to genome. For the purpose of control, in the middle of such an oligo, and we can put one mismatch, one wrong nucleotide, which is not nucleotide of the genome, into it. So in the future, when you do hybridization, you have a control. So that's for the technical reason. So there, this is what the microarray hybridization look like. So this is this about the size, 12.7 centimeter on one side. So this put a microarray to put in this kind of stuff, commercial product. So then this here, we amplify, so one of a little region here, that means there's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, so this many oligos, which is overlapping to the genome, then and also they're mismatch hybridized with the DNA or RNA you prepare and use to hybrid them. You see, most often the mismatch do not show signal, and real match the genome have signal. But occasionally, if some spot have specific like high GC content, that even can hybridize with the wrong sequence, and because they have stronger hydrogen bond force. And so, like this one, in certain kind of soft hybridization condition. So in this way, you see the control most often work. Then for one single signal, you are not sure of the real matching, but if you follow up a continuous several stretch, we call the transfer in the piece of RNA, then you're more confident statistically that the signals really come from that gene or come from the wrong, I mean, hybridization, chemical experiment. So that's what the technique. And so right now in America, in the country, a lot of people gradually also use Celexa, use a number of techniques for sequencing. I think they can complement with each other technically. So then question is that where should we get a sample in order to know what is the genetic variation in terms of copy number variation in Drosophila gaster. So we decided go to Africa, because we everybody here know that we human being came from Africa, right? All the human being, no matter you are Europe, European or Asia, we just migrate out of Africa, say 150,000 years ago. In the recent event, say 60,000 years ago. Then after that, we diverge, we migrate to different places, become Asian and European or Aboriginal, so on and so forth. Here, I want to tell you that actually for this study of Drosophila natural history also pointed out that strong evidence showed that the Drosophila today, this species, Drosophila gaster, also originated in the origin center in Africa. So that means in the original place and the origination place, the individual there should contain the maximum genetic diversity. So therefore, in sample them, we're able to know how those genes are created. Idea really is that, well, you go there, you grab one single individual fly, you grow in a bottle, you form kind of ice female line, this jogging. So then you grab the DNA, then you can cut the genomic DNA randomly in about 200 to 300 base pair long fragment. Technically, so of course, we did a lot of control experiment to ensure that a few hundred base pair is a good length. Then you label those genomic DNA from each individual Drosophila. We say once again, sort kind of fluorescence or just that kind of stuff. Then denature it, hybridize against the tiling array, which is made of entire Drosophila strain based on one strain, or the reference line. If the individual you catch, there is a in certain genetic region have a duplicated, then that means in per unit of DNA, you have more copy number of DNA there, more molecule is there. So you hybridize against the tiling array, then you are going to get a stronger signal for a particular genetic region, which have been synthesized in that region. So then you can use laser to find out, oh, okay, there's a much stronger signal. In early day, people thought that you have one gene duplicate copy, you would have a twice of intensity. That's not true, because the intensity of the mayor, all kind of chemical condition, actually follow sort of kind of continuous distribution, averaging about 1.3 to 1.6 the duplicate copy, as much as one single copy. That's what we observe after many type of experiment. Anyway, total, we collect about 15 strain in this kind of a location, different country from East Africa to West Africa. And then we repeat experiment 3 times. So total eventual number is that we get about 2.7 billion number or value. So they recorded all the hybridization intensity. So their biology right now gradually trying to approach physics, unlike the big number. In early days, it was top of one or two. Right now we put 2.7 billion recurves. So you have to be good in the computation analysis in all kind of phase. So that the data we created, that technique we use. Then first thing, we decide to find a good control line, or called the training line. treating the idea is that, well, if we have some Drosophila lab line, we already know by other kind of genetic experiment know that in certain region there's a new gene duplicate or segmental duplicate. Like in this particular line, we have about more than 200 KB region which have a duplicate in two regions, this first one and the second one, third one. So we already know by in situ hybridization, like what we did here today by fluorescence, and so know that. So then we grab the DNA, we prepare the DNA from this particular line, and then test their intensity distribution with this kind of tiling array. That the tiling array eventually, you see that first of all, so this is one window we reported about distribution of intensity. Idea, you thought that, well, if there's a gene to be copied, you would have a higher kind of intensity. So first, that well, for the same kind of a copy, single copy region, like this one, you have a big variation, high from there, low from there. You compare intensity of this line against the reference line, which people use to make that tiny array. So average, in about zero, but you average them, it's stable, just like in this region, zero. However, what is really make us happy is that once you enter the duplicate region, although they also have big variation, you can describe it in some kind of normal distribution that describe the intensity of the measurement or signal measurement, and you have big variation there. But the first rough, smoothing line you created, you take that like a million number, you see that's fluctuating. But however, they're stably fluctuating in a ceiling higher level than this one. Okay, this one, then when the duplication disappears, this is their short single copy number, then like this one, and come here again, and come here again, so forth. So anyway, that told us the technical work. But you have to deal with the big variation. This is known region. For those unknown regions, you don't worry about that. So next one is that we have to define what type of duplicate copy number we can measure by this number. So by compare to the outgroup species, we're able to determine if we see a copy number variation by compared to outgroup like Drosophila simulans, then you are able to infer ancestral state. Ancestral state could be in the two chromosomes have two copies. That means in one genome have one copy. They also could be ancestral already have two copies, each one, so totally have four copies deployed. And then in the derived state, the waving species individual, and if this one deleted, then you get no copy, it becomes zero. So this one just complete deletion. Then this one is that, well, if a duplicate happened, because each one, this one duplicate the two copies there, in this case we call tandem duplicate, doesn't matter, different genome size, then totally become two and become four. Well, even if it's already a duplicate, you might also lost one copy, so make two copies. So we decide to refine this level of duplicate copy within the stream population there. So the present reference string absent, so there's absent present. That's the absent there. So the question right now becomes statistic. How do you deal with statistics? Although empirically tell you that by averaging, you know, there are some like indication about duplicate copy. So, but there are two valuable sources we have to take advantage of it. One is that for a single copy region, you have sort kind of statistic distribution for the intensity distribution, which is continuous, and which is also like certain kind of distribution. But within duplicate copy, you also have an intensity distribution. They have a slightly different shift of the distribution. And meanwhile, because the treating line provides us what probability when you're walking in one state, what probability you can jump to the second stage of duplication, that suggests that we can use something like a Markovian chain transition theory, Markovian transition matrix, which were empirically you can describe a transition probability between two kind of states. However, the two states is hidden because before you test that, you don't know what's really going on there. You know that in each region, you also have a weighted region in intensity distribution. So therefore, you can describe in certain by that kind of reason I described their signal distribution, you have initial distribution there. That's why I probably most of you are familiar with the kind of stuff. Then you combine them together, two more together, you can call it hidden Markovian chain process. It's widely used in evolution analysis, in phylogeny analysis right now, which introduced this tour into a copy number variation theory with that kind of data. And I think that eventually can even decode probability, giving a number, what probability, called the posterior probability, they are duplicate based on the number. So this is what we talk about, what we measure empirically. And then this one is based on this hidden Markovian chain theory. We develop that computing, called the decoding probability, compute the probability that one region is duplicate copy in each kind of window you go. So this is in that empirical region is very nicely overlapping, accurately overlapping what we are in the duplicate copy. So in this way, in all the chromosome, four chromosomes, we generate entire chromosome in that kind of distribution probability. So there, that give us a more rational guess with more confidence. So then the rest of the work is very simple, and you just go to all the 15 different lines, all the entire genome, which is about 130 million base for each genome. So this here is one example, like data like this one. So this is one region in the chromosome. So go from this region to this region. So each dot is the signal we observe from microarray. Then we also compute probability like this one in this kind of curve. You see the probability of sun is higher like this one. So suggest that in this particular genomic location, there is this line, this line, this line, this, and they have duplicate. They have copy number variation or duplicate copy number in this region. But in this line, they're absent. There's no duplicate copy there. So this is really this kind of very straightforward thing after that his model was created. And then total number we observe right now, this first set of number we know, the difference among different individuals, this group of 15 fly. Raw data with a number of copy number is 2,211, that's duplication. Well, computer vision line, you can also sum copy number is caused by deletion in some individual. That's 1,428. But when I put that number, you would question that, well, this number, you know, the compound, that's a big, massive number, which about more than 2.7 billion number, a lot of variation there. How much you know, they are true. So then we come to the next work, or simple work. Yeah.
It seems to me that when you do to the microarray, because you only have one sequence on the front of the microarray, you can very clearly detect recent duplications because their sequences are going to be same, not yet diverse. But the older they get, then your signal will slowly sort of decay away because your microarray. So do you have any idea? I mean, if that distribution is very smooth, then it might actually be very hard for you to sort of draw a line between duplicated and non-duplicated because the variation.
That's very good. That's very, very good suggestion there. That just said that, you know, within individual, some mutation is young, some mutation is old. For the old, you accumulate a lot of divergence, right? That provide that going to make errors. So you're going to lose some information for the oldest one. But today we know that we can have an actual assumption, not assumption, we have an empirical experience that given within species variation, the distribution of nucleotide different among different allele, the maximum one, in Drosophila, average around something like 0.005, then the sort kind of fluctuation. So you talk about every 1,000 base pair, you have a few base pair are different. So that's the number we know that could not be detected by the error if they're created differently. That I think you're right. But however, from this number, we also know that we catch most of them. You can use it to to mayors, like different species, that's why. In different species, that number much bigger, divergence bigger. So that's why you're losing information. That we see that usually if species diverge for more than 2 or 4 million years old, you can't use the technology. Because that there's about maybe 30 or 40% of signal. On average, each nucleotide going to run into one mismatch mutation. You can test about that. So then we did the next work. That is very simple. This is very boring work. Anyway, we predict about 2,000, 3,000 common variation there. So we sample 10% of them, or 5% of them. 5%, that's about 150 common variation. We also have actual prediction where it should happen, in which region. So after that, we decided just a polymerase chain reaction design primer in the flanking region, which flank that duplicate copy number, amplify them, sequence them to say how many of them are true. You know, that kind of works. So that eventually we decide to provide estimation for false positive rate, independent false positive rate. A lot of people didn't do this job, you know, but we decide to do this way. And this is approach. Approach is that say, wild type, there's one gene region of interest. We design three primers. That's the arrow primer. Mutant, if there's a duplicate copy, one copy becomes two copy, then because the sequence is similar, so you have this one, this one, this one, this one. Then you amplify the PCR, you're going to get different number of the band. In that case, if no duplicate copy, if no copy, then this one and this one, you're looking for the point, they amplify nothing or very, very short oligo. But if they're duplicate copy, then this one and this one, you're going to generate a long fragment there. So after that, you send the sequence to the sequencer, and then you get a sequence. So you can accurately know that how many of them are true. Based on this approach, you work about more than 1 year for this thing to compute. This is the number we measure. So totally we found that every 100 prediction by this technology, you would find that 86 are correct in there. But 14% is untrue, or called a false positive, not true. So before that, we read a number of other reference. A lot of people say, oh, the technology is highly accurate. You talk about a few every 1,000, and I found that most of them are not doing this kind of independent testing. So that's why they have underestimated this false positive rate. So this is, so far we know, the first number of false positive rate for this type of technology, 14% is untrue. So that's why, but it's not bad. Anyway, we still take majority of them, the vast majority of them, which are true, so it's not bad. Then consider this number, we correct them. So think about this part. So that's the correct false positive number is 1,901 duplication, 757 deletion. That's right now something we're very sure for the duplicate in the entire genome among 50 individuals. Here, I will talk about this number later on. So then we also know what is median and what is mean, and what is, so that kind of size.
How are you distinguishing a duplication from a deletion?
You convert to the reference line because you have a genomic sequence which you use to make that microarray and make that microarray. So you look at if a signal is weaker than that, if signal is weaker in the microarray, you know, you have some, maybe one copy number deleted from that reference line.
Yes, but what does the reference mean? And how do you know the direction of the event?
Yeah, good question. But let's say, in Asia, but there is a 2 million Drosophila, okay, effect component. So about in 2002, that year, someone catch one line to measure their genomic sequence. And then you have ATTGC, whatever, anyway, to get a CC, total is about 120. That many base pair. So the microarray consists of the oligo, which is synthesized from this DNA sequence in this particular line. Then, if this line, today we measure, you know, the technology, have a signal. So follow that distribution with that reference line, which is higher, as you said, there's a duplicate. But if this line have a weaker signal.
If But compared, the reference is just one random reference.
Not one random. You also prepare DNA from there to do to kind of hybridization, compare them, right? You can prepare. So this one you get genetic sequence. You can prepare the technology, prepare genomic DNA with the same technology using to hybridize against tiny RNA itself, right? Then you measure the intensity of this. You prepare DNA from this line, and the signal prepared from this line, you know that which line have stronger signal, right? The line have weaker signal, you know that, oh, they have less DNA than this one, so that becomes deletion.
I think the question is whether, how can you tell it's a deletion from your test strain or insertion in Drosophila? Is that
good? What?
The question is, one, you can tell they're different, but you don't know which came first.
Oh.
You don't know whether one is
okay. Yeah. I see what you're arguing now. Don't worry about right. that. In Drosophila, what's nice is that, you know, we have Drosophila melanogaster, that's what we are talking about it. Today, we also have Drosophila similar, and their genomic sequence is also there. You can align their sequence from outside the entire just different species, you know, align them together. We have also have more strain there, Drosophila, like pseudo Opticura. So by this way, you can actually know that, you know, what your ancestral state look like. Then you compare them to that one. That can give you a general idea about the deletion insertion, right?
So this is a parsimonious reconstruction.
Yeah, the parsimonious, but I haven't read that translation, but you actually, yeah, that's a parsimonious to infer the ancestral state. For example, I give you one that continue what Marty suggested. So anyway, so this one, well, you see some lines here is higher, there is a two band, there is one band, there is two band, then there are a lot of species there. So you said, in this case, so what is the ancestral line? Well, then you have to rely on other stuff there. So all the algae have two band, you know, the ancestral state, there are two copy number there. Then in this way, some part of a near within species that becomes ancestral, this one becomes derived inversion state. So that's called a parsimony. So anyway, so right now that's what we know. Right now, come back to one of the questions, how the copy number is distributed among different Drosophila individuals. This is the first statistic. So total we have 15 Drosophila. So this is a trading line. So total number is average about 312. So someone like this line slightly higher than 300. This one just about 300. So someone is lower, but they look like in general is not that much big variation. So they're surrounded by the average 312. As standard deviation about 31.9. So on the average side, each one just differ by that much. So that coefficient of deviation, that is well also around about 10%. So it's a very good distribution. Among them, two-thirds of duplicate, one-third are deletion. So that we also populate that stuff in the table. Anyway, this is the first graph that tells that among different individual fruit fly, and we really talk about a few hundred of gene number which are absent or present. That is a new level of genetic variation right now. We can talk about it in the entire genome. And so that's what we see. Well, you might ask what happened to human being. Some group in England, I mean, some people there come to the center publishing human data that also talk about 1-200. But there, when people told me that they couldn't use the technology to the human genome is unsuccessful. And so that there's a lot of big error there because we human beings have much more, I mean, repetitive sequence, which were buried in real signals, right? That's what that part of the reason. So we're still waiting for the accurate number. But I believe that probably human being was probably either higher or lower, was to talk about the hundred of gene number different. Now, and the other question right now, Tom, and are those different copy number of gene in our genome present or absent? Are they good for our survival? This is very simple. Layman question or constructive question. For evolution biology, we ask that, are those different copy number of gene right now are in the process to fixation or are they just come and go? or select subject to the negative selection. This is a evolution biological problem. I would recommend you about the problem to read the recent review in Nature, talk about the human psychological disease from genetic problem, the recognition problem. There they show that there is about several tens of the inheritable like depression, psychological problem. There were causes associated with this kind of copy number variation in certain gene family. You read that this published about, I think last week, I read it. In Drosophila, we also know that from previous work that the number of lines show that it's sound like most often they are subject to, associated with this sort of kind of undesirable effect. So right now, question become how to measure that. What evolution force drive evolution of this copy number variation? So that second question there. The second, first observation, after you get the entire genome copy number variation, you are able to category them in different genomic regions. You see the highest region in intergenic region, there is about, we observe 733 among 59, which are duplication polymorphic. There are 425 are deletion, about same kind of ratio. Lowest one is complete gene. So you know some complete gene is the absent or present. In Drosophila, the complete gene region is about, you might wonder that the total gene length is about also 50% or even higher than that one. But you see that only 73, so that is just about 10% of intergenic region. But their total complete gene region, add them together, about similar. Or even this one should be slightly higher. Then lowest one, only 10 for deletion. Okay, that's the first comparison. In 20 region, just between exonic region and intergenic region. So exonic is within exon, there's certain kind of insertion or deletion there, or copy number variation there. So that 224, 79. What this told us, right now we need assumption. If we believe that based on early observation of duplication copy, if that duplication copy is at the mutation process is randomly each generation, you know, located in evenly distributed kind of region, you don't expect that kind of big difference between this one and this one. That's the first guess. But you said you have no evidence. Yeah, we have no evidence for the general that case so far. There are no genuine wide measurement. However, we have other kind of analysis that I will show you that. Then other thing I want to remind you that intergenic region and complete gene region, different in that this region probably have more functionality. Okay, they encode the real gene function, and this one don't. So in that case, you would...
Yes, but your duplicated region are very small, 300 something in median distribution. So if this is imposed by just the mechanism of duplication, you will, the probability to delete a complete gene is very low. So it might not be a problem of selection.
Yeah, that's the same question I talked about. That. Maybe probably a no, maybe level is a no. So remember that possibility in mind. So maybe just mutation rate is different, you know, in terms of complete region. Let's think of that possible too. But as most striking that this one have fewer functionality, this one stronger functionality. That's the first thing you can remember. Now let's do another testing to see what's going on there. So the testing really comes from a classic population genetic measurement called the Tajima D test or frequency, psi frequency plot. And I guess a lot of people come here, Dean Hawson, we already talk about that. That theory said that giving a kind of genetic variation, you can generate a distribution under expectation of strict neutrality. Well, the near neutrality, you can also do that, but much more difficult. Strict neutrality. And so you can have near computer simulation, a lot of theory already published that. Then based on closing theory that said that the length of each gene genealogy follow exponential distribution, the length of each gene genealogy branch is follow that exponential distribution. Therefore, by compare the total number accumulated among the weighted species, then you're able to infer, does this variation follow up neutrality, or does variation follow up like the pattern shape, a positive or left selection or balance selection, where Molly is expert and authority to do that. So then you compare that distribution with the neutral distribution. Then you see that, well, in the neutral distribution, we also compute based on the certain kind of quantitative model that frequency mean when selection coefficient equal to zero. Well, anyway, neutral, then you should expect to see that one. But if there's a negative selection, then for the reason that most often those branch of gene genealogy is short, so like star-like structure there. So in that case, the mutation accumulated going to follow kind of the bias for toward the minority. I mean, there's a single, this is one means this allele, the copy version just showed up in one allele. So you have two, three, four, you compare to a group or you compare the different weighted species. So I mean, if the negative selection, you can do push distribution favoring this one, so higher than the neutrality distribution. So after this comparison, we did the entire genome, not single gene there. So that suggests, sounds like in nature, the picture really that you can read about the paper there, we talk about all the analysis. The picture really that in nature, sounds like most of the copy number variation is in low frequency. So therefore, you sample them, most of you say, oh, just shoot up one or twice. So in that, so that most obvious interpretation that such rare low frequency, there must be some force which will prevent them from you know, prevailing as what the neutral fluctuation require. So in that case, it means short kind of negative selection against it. So that when they're not happy or slightly happy, so there's one in the population for a little while before it disappeared. So that is, if we don't believe the first observation, because we don't have mutation, this one also point out possibility that those copy of variation may follow negative selection. But question comes, what about the new gene evaluation? How they come? Well, that's my impression that don't worry about that. You know, each generation, if there were a small amount of variation, which is advantageous, which spread over a population, we accumulate time. We talk about millions of generations, and 2N generations, then they eventually can accumulate rapidly. So that's the general picture we get.
Can I just ask about two slides prior to this one? The one with the numbers of insertions and deletions.
Yeah. This one?
Yes. So your data only includes tandem repeats in the book. When you start off by looking for tandem repeats.
Actually, opposite. We do for the measurement of particle control four particle array there, that 87%. You design primer, amplify them, only in time duplicate you become measurable. So we do include that one.
I was interested in these exons, right? So why are there few deletions in the exons? And one reason is because you only count in the data genes which had a repeated exon in the first place, right? So in order to show up in the first place, there must have been a repeated exon.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, I mean, a different question you could ask is are there any genes which are polymorphic for a deletion of an exon?
Yeah, that's true.
But that's a different question because
it didn't
show up in your data in the first
place. Sure,
so
that's right.
So one reason why that number of deletions in the exons is small is because there just aren't very many genes which have repeated exons in the first place.
Do you detect one copy going to zero in your microarray?
You mean in the intron?
Anywhere.
Oh.
Yeah. Microarray, you're including copy number where the ancestral is one.
You mean complete deletion, right?
Do you see? Can you detect that in your microarray?
I think so. We had a few number like that. That's right. So but in case of intron here, what I tried to point out that if there's other way to measure the functionality in the intron, they actually also harbor some important element for like regulation or even like a microRNA or something like that. So end up, we get the impression in the computing that intron are actually subject to stronger negative selection. So that,
just to be clear, because this 1 to 0 is exactly the question I was asking. And the way I understood it is when you were looking for these things in the first place, you only looked for the repeated things. Anything that wasn't repeated wasn't in the data. Right? So therefore, are you including the 1s to 0s or not?
Oh, I think this one, yeah. Let me think. I caught one thing. So you compute zero deletion. Yes, of course. Because if in a single copy number region which appear in reference line, you create the line, then the deletion suggests that it becomes zero. Yeah, we do. So that's another reason that we tell me why, that the entire gene is deleted, the entire region deleted, so that might cause problems why deletion is subject to stronger selection. Yeah, I remember that.
I have another question. So you have two different techniques, let's say one with chromosome fish hybridization and then these tiny RNAs. So how much they overlap the results? Did you find all the ones that you...
I couldn't hear about that. Sorry, I have some hearing problem.
So the duplication you had identified by fish hybridization, did you find them in your with this other approach? Or
you mean for the deletion?
Or the duplication. What is the overlap of the two type of data? So we have two techniques to try to look for duplication.
That's right.
Okay, so you apply them, I guess, at least for one strain to do the same kind of
sure,
facts.
Sure.
So how much of an overlap you get from the two techniques?
Oh, I see. I should repeat about that work we say. The two techniques, the first thing we use a microarray, secondly we use a PCR amplifier. PCR amplifier, so we just sample, say, 1 to 50 predict copy number variation based on the first technique, microarray, then you amplify how many of them are true of what we predict in the first area. I just point out that 14% of them are untrue. Among there, you know, some like deletion, some duplication. So that's about total number. And so about 14%. So no, about 86%.
The question was the comparison of the result with the chromosome fish hybridization. We were talking about at the beginning.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Now,
given the set of data.
How many of those may just be polymorphic, actually?
In the first study there, what we report there, we usually, if we find a new gene there in the fish, then we immediately PCR different strain we collect from different Madagascar strain. So we usually only take those strains which have been fixed. So that's different set of data. So fake, not polymorphic gene, the first set of data. We at that time, we are interested how often new gene intergenerates a fixed evolutionary feature. So different set of data. Right now, we talk about different things. Now we talk about, we're what different between different branch or different species, which have been fixed. Talk about age about more than 3 or 4 million a year. This one talk about polymorphism. Their age distribution follows it. Like
these are all Drosophila melanogaster?
We came from nature, and the same species.
They are much closer in terms of evolution.
Sure. Okay. I should give some of their theoretics in that you are polymorphic in nature. If you follow up by the genealogy theory, follow up comments about 2 generations ago, they might share one common sister. So then spread over the entire species. So all the age between them just follow the average. Then, of course, that average also follows sort of kind of variation, which follows exponential distribution. So we talk about different time scale. Yeah. Anyway, I think how about we take 15-minute break? Then I talk about the next thing, which is big variation about the rate among different species. So anyway, I want to present this one, the new gene, plant genome. Reason I want to do it at that, even end up we found something I never expected before we engage in the analysis of the genome, that is a big variation of the original gene rate and suggests very different functionality in the genome. But before I talk about that, we have to sort of summarize some general conventional ideas. At that time, people didn't believe in the gene and the gene of plants. First one that people know, in the plant, the genome is highly redundant in the sense that usually long plant genome is very big, and also they are polyploid, and so the high repetitive sequence. The genome duplication, first idea people know. Second thing is people believe that plant is functionally simpler than animal genome. You think about it, we have such an elegant neuron system, brain, and don't have it. So that time, some people even joke. That's why the people in plant found a journal called Plant Cell. They feel they were discrimination because the people do animals and what you plant is simpler. That's other kind of idea. I used to have an argument discussion with Jeffrey Palmer, one of the very prominent plant genome. He didn't believe the plant gene can be originated from intron, exon structure. So strong arguments that that kind of gene should be originated rarely. Finally, and in general, at that time people believed that in the plant, especially like monocon, the plant have two branch, one is monocon, other one is dicon. The two kind of plants. So they say that in molecules, the virtual position should be have low activity, therefore that impossible to create a retroposed gene in large quantities. So this is what before we did analysis, general thing I heard from people who care about the plant. But I said, however, I point out in the paper, the first paper about the new gene created by virtual position is by Dover of Cambridge in 1990, Plato acting, probably Nature. Second one is our former colleague, Deborah Trostworth, 1998. She found the ADH, the new gene copy created by this patient. And then I did one new gene there with Walter Gilbert. And so then the autopsies, some group in Shanghai analyzed it from the entire adopt genome, only 50 gene copy created by retroposition, and most of them are not functional, therefore. That is consistent with the general picture that is, you know, the low activity of retroposition in new gene rarely that people we know. But when I have to remark that what they call the retroposition is called the molecular mechanism, and one pair of the gene were transcribed in the primary RNA. Primary, I mean that they also contain, if they're an intron printer gene, the cell primary RNA also transcribe that intron, so we call primary messenger RNA. Then after a very accurate molecular machinery called splice machinery, we cut out the intron, so then two parts fused together become mature continuous messenger RNA, which were encoded protein. Then by the transcription, then that can become DNA in terms of a new quantum location. If that location crosses in the middle of nowhere, i.e. there are no regular sequence there, they couldn't transcribe, then such a gene becomes pseudogene, no functional graduate, select against, disappear from nature. And most interesting thing that this gene, when the process pointed out, they show clear direction. Origination. They're pointing out from parental gene to a new gene. I said, yes, sir, next week, can you talk about this? She finds something very interesting, which will let Chicago with us. And so right now we're dealing with two very simple problems we have. People do that. Are there any new gene that originates in plant recently? If there is, what is the rate of new gene origination in grass? We have the same problem with new gene. So then this is very simple, is right compare program and download the genome of the rice. Right now there is two genomes from two sub-dishes of rice available. And the other one from the cone, they're not completed yet, but there are a lot of very, very genetic DNA in there. And today, there are about another two plants, Popia and Popner. Their genomes are available. We did a nice reunion at that time, interested in the, this called Monica plant. So you have this computer flow, computation flow, just simply well, right computer program, identify all the gene duplicates that any two pair of duplicates that one copy have intron, other copy doesn't have intron, so in this we can clearly tell which one derived states, which one is uncertain states. So that then there's some original consideration to tell which one is most likely recent pair of from the original creation. So then the initial observation, which is did by Wong Wang, my former postdoc, identified 4,499 new gene created by those which really surprised me. First time we observed as each of the computer programs through the genome, so many. And so among them, this, so looking at those pair of H1 genes, they have a clear picture that, well, the parental genes, like in this case, they have three exons, two introns. So new gene lost the two introns, so they created a new chromosome. And if the gene is very young, in a flanking region, you would see like the high repetitive sequence. This is about 8 nucleotide long. So that when your solution jumps something inside genome, you automatically create a short duplicate. So that leave you some kind of feature for this new gene copy. This is parental gene. So if your parental gene have no intron, in that case, you can also like detect this signal to tell the gene is a new gene or not. So. And also, there is a polyATL there. So, this is what we observed. Summary was in the rice genome, there is about total about 5,720 or 34 gene combinations, but this one is derived. As an offer operation, you then have some of them have gene duplicate copy, so you definitely see that many. So totally, we identify 1,235 the operation event. So each of them can create maybe three or four homologous copy, parallel copy there. Among them, we're pretty sure that at least about 900 are functional. Just simply by layer, the sufficient rate between the prevalent site and C-dominant site. If a gene is functional, most often, I talk about it, more than 90% of possibility that their sufficient rate in the prevalent site can be lower than the prevalent site because natural purified selection wipe them out so you don't see it. So that is observation, but this is really quite a big variation, such that this variation really contributed for most. Well, 38% of the total gene in the rice genome. This is very big compared to the mammal or any other genome. No genome has such a big proportion of the gene created by the kind of transformation event. So there, they already tell that rice or grass species is unusual genome. So the question is that, but dealing with that, well, people thought, plant is a function is simpler than animal genome. What are you going to say? I mean, the functionality. The new gene originally rarely. This is untrue. And no activity of the gene is also untrue. So we get rid of the two old ideas in the community. Now, question is that what is mechanism created the reciprocal gene? I talk about this because plant have additional reciprocation machinery than the animal. That's it, beside the standard mechanism, we talk about that, reverse time mutase, you can change the new gene from intron containing to the intron S copy. However, one plant researcher in Georgia, about 13 years ago, he found that one thing that there is a short kind of long-term repeat retrotransposon. You know, this this is not gene, this is kind of something like a virus or a parasite, genetic parasite associated with the gene. So they have some structure like virus. They can attack genome, but they're no longer independent, become virus, so they're long time associated with genes. So then in the dose side, the structure that I find long term repeat, 3 months, that there's something kind of several hundred bits of sequence. Among them, there are three genes there. Some gene is highly similar to the virus gene, like how to pack the virus independent life, and some in charge of polymerase and synthesize genome, so on and so forth. They're special anchor. So that's the structure. He found that Brassica, Brassica, this is special lawyer seed crop plant. There's such a element inside. They're containing, after they duplicate it, after the restrictions are duplicated, jump to the other point in the genome, they also can convert it, arrest some nearby gene, capture them inside transposa, eventually some of them can develop that this from a nuclear gene can be arrested by a retro transposa. That capture the gene in transposa into lost intron, lost sequence. But because the gene have no intron, so they assume that short kind of retro position may be initiated by this retro transposer. So he claimed this different kind of mechanism. So we decided to find that many of this gene will tell how many of them created by this one, or how many of this gene flanked by obviously long term repeat, by that we know that they recruited the new gene, they make the new copy. So what we did eventually, we just write computer program to tell how often the new gene in 25 kb away, other way, they're flanked by two long-term repeats. So in about 1,235 primary response events, we only say there are 25 new genes which is within 20 kb in this region of that long-term repeat. Then there are 27 genes in the middle of that long-term repeat of retro transposon. There are 32 other sites. That means the most majority still follow the mechanism of retro mechanism to create the retro gene. This mechanism might be just only responsible for a few percent of this gene. So that is so we know the relative importance of the two mechanisms creating the retro gene. Here, I give you some example of the genes created, like the first new gene. The green color shows this is a virtual gene by this version. The orange color shows that long-term repeat. And they also keep some feature sign that when this thing becomes replicated, it's not from this side, TBS PPT side there. So this new gene, their second case is there, third case is there, fourth case is there. In other words, so they even don't show within that virtual transposa, they even distribute it inside that gene, so they can capture the gene randomly inside the structure of virtual transposa. Then the question is similar, but what different between the new virtual transposa gene in terms of their GC content? So that's most people concerned. And so then they will compute virtually the GC content in the codon position 1, 2, 3 stop encoding region. Then we categorize all the kind of different genes, seeding and weight ratio gene, seeding and weight ratio gene, they're still kind of different. So I mean, the ratio gene, some like this one, is higher average than the gene level. So then there's a lot of ratio gene. So we categorize the difference in the GC content. Well, the gene is functional. So right now, this one is one of the most popular, simpler way to tell functionality of the gene, simply compute substitution rate at the patient side of protein coding region, substitution rate at the telomere side. I just mentioned that if a gene is functioning less, the pseudogene that would see this. Of course, on our region, if I see this, that gene might not be necessarily pseudogene, but that in either case, the case, then the possibility that pseudogene is going to be subtle problem, but we decide to use a conservative approach. So if for a functional gene, then the substitution rate at the repeat site should be lower than something with lower than CNR and conservation less than 1. It's a very simple thing. So then we compute, we give this testing test computer test, the Russian age. So how old are those genes are? That's long term repeat, that's what I'm told. It's a pseudo gene function gene, different color. So we talk about virtual case ratio. It is a very recent, most of them within about 10 or 20 billion years, much younger than the animal. What about functional contribution? This is cumulative percentage frequency of this ratio. You know, you go to 1, that means all the genes restricted to good. So there's 1, that means about 90% gene less than 1. But you have more than 75%, 80% of this gene, they have kept ratio lower than 1, around about 0.5. So therefore, such that the most majority of those genes we detected, they are functional because there's a very dramatic selection, which we say called gain substitution, which can become fit in this replacement site. So that's how we show that it might be functional. However, this is a pseudo gene functional gene, whether the impression data, at that time, not that much impression data there. But we see functional gene, most of them, we are able to see some EST sequence or DNA reaction, some like of evidence for impression. But pseudo gene for those structures is different where they have very few.
If you go back to the previous slide, so there are quite a few that go up to 1.5. So does this actually, for the ratio which is not really
that.
So does this reflect actually the error bars on your measure? So maybe 80% is not really significant.
That's a good question. Everybody know that when this one encode to 1, most of them were considered subject to kind of purified selection, but even higher than 1, where people usually believe that significantly higher than 1, there might be a result of positive selection. Positive selection that you favor the fixation of pericyte change. Only that positive selection can do that. But if we really find that case, anyway, go to the statute, so if you didn't pay attention to that part. But in the practice, even people don't know how in genetic, they want to identify positive selection and usually use this criteria. If compute is a ratio with a higher than 1, then say like 2 or 3 or 4, in that case, they claim that the gene might be subject to positive selection. So that's what most people
do. But it also depends on how many substitution you have in your gene, because if it's a few substitutions, it could be just a stochastic variation. So there should be some kind of error estimation.
Of course,
there's no indication of how many significant.
That's the issue. I know that you're right. Also, depends on if this bar is very small, then right. You follow kind of possible distribution. Sometimes you can get a kind of error. So, issue there's that issue there. There are a lot of people talk about that to that domain. How to compute a case issue higher than 1. This is Jin Yang in England. He spent a lot of time about this. About the things. And so right now, well, most of genes, they really depress. We did some simple RT-PCR experiment, detect the transcript. Right now, the next question I want to highlight, which is very interesting. So when the analysis completed, I decided, don't trust the computer result that much. If I don't manually check their alignment, I wouldn't trust it. So eventually we decided to check 200 alignment between parental gene and new gene, to look at how if the system alignment code is high or no. So that's my habit. I don't just simply run program and publish it. So in the 200, I see something very strange. As their member maybe that fit into another derivation project. So this is I align parental gene, the sequence, and the new gene there. So this one, let me see. Top is a new gene, that's right. This one is a parental gene. Align them together, like first one, grass family transmission factor. Align them, it's very interesting that the new gene lost stop coda. It's just infinite loss, just 3 different, not there. So that first thing, that's, well, that's not surprising, something happened. Then you go to tyrosine protein kinase. I just give you an example, a lot of that, I can summarize it out. the new gene here also lost exact that stop code, just 3 nucleotide deletion. And then sometimes it also lost stop code.
But that's not the ATG.
I will follow that. Sure, they can use HP downplacing, but they lost authentic stop code for that because there's some
biology. Why don't you align the ATG with that ATG?
In biology, you know, you may or fluence protein and immediately where's the real stop code. Statistically, in the eukaryote, you can also measure the frequency of, this is invented by a Japanese colleague, for a rare stop code on the ATG there. So this is infinite reading you have. But if RNA is transmitted like this way, and the question becomes how the translation machinery can recognize the real authentic stop code.
It's a much simpler question. The simpler question is, why don't you just say with your second example that the alignment is wrong? And that in fact, ATG, they both have the same ATG, it's just misaligned.
Sure, let me follow that. The description one eventually follow. But here I will tell you the additional argument. How to find real stop code? Well, you just simply scan those ATG in this region. You align those sequence starting time that you're using. Stop code on your ATG frequency is much higher than in this region because the scanning model of those recognition signal is required. So that's true. So anyway, let's talk about all the things we observed there. A number of assumptions, including assumptions we just mentioned. So some of them lost stop code. Some family lost both. They lost both stop code and stop code. So total, we observe in sunlight. So this is what, so this is when we observe. So total, we summarize that they lost both stop code about 38%. This is a really big problem. You're adding to here more than 70% of those genes. New gene lost either stop codon, or both stop codon. Right now, we come into trouble. How to understand that? One is that what you said, maybe alignment is there. And the other part is that the gene just sugar gene that is no longer able to maintain the original machinery. And especially if you have a recent divergent gene, you can have very high alignment sequence quality.
Were those numbers larger than for the loss of any other code?
Not of what code?
Any code.
Yeah.
What's the average probability of deletion of one code on in the middle?
That's another thing. But there, when you see that all of them, they keep in frame structure there. The long system mutation, the only difference that is about the loss of code. So,
but are you saying it's more likely to lose a start or a stop than it is to lose an
OK. Good argument, that's right. So they're like, you know, you compare virtually here with you've lost spells, and more like stop. But anyway, for the range argument, we're dealing here, so not in this case, there might be something we're not sure. But right now, question right now is, are those genes, is a pseudo gene, you know, they cannot stop the translation, they cannot hurt it properly. So that's the first possibility we thought a lot if I show alignment, all right? So later, eventually, but that argument has a problem. What problem? Because we align those real genes against parental genes, then they keep perfect and intact reading frame, the first one. Second, you compute their caregiver ratio, they are obviously subject to strong negative selection. So that.
What's the number, what this percentage are for the third codon in the protein?
Which one?
I mean, if you pick a third codon in the protein, what's the percentage of loss for the third codon in the protein?
Pick a first codon, where?
No, the third. Pick the third, the second, pick the fourth.
Oh,
so what do you get?
You mean third codon position, right?
Yeah.
That's what I just said. That first of all.
No, the third codon in the protein. Pick anyone within the protein. How much is it, these numbers?
Anyone within the protein?
Yeah.
You pick a random codon in your one sequence.
Yeah.
What's the probability that it's aligned with an identical codon in the other sequence?
You mean the last one, the probability?
Yes.
Random, the last. And so there we see that few. The few, I suggest to you, we paid attention to that the reading frame can get continually translated. So inside, there is a very few infinite deletion there. So much lower than decimal. So that try to say that, well, there's some kind of selection for it. So that
I'm sorry, but can you go back to the alignments? Right?
Yeah, okay.
There is quite a bit of, if I go downstream of this ATG, there's quite a bit of mismatches, right?
Yeah.
So that you don't consider...
Well, the mismatch that we use, the question becomes, are the alignments significant? Yeah. So there I didn't put them there, they are significant. Then question that the accumulated kind of mismatch, right? That we call substitution between Kunin and Eugene after the path. Some eruption time, like 20 million years, accumulated about that. But however, the point I tried to make that right now we have given interpretation. If you believe.
The question is, I think everybody's trying to understand, you're basically saying that start and stop codons are special.
That's true.
Special dynamics.
That's true.
And we're asking, are they really special? Or can you make a hypothesis that there is just a large rate at which any given codon is not conserved?
We can. But I tell you that I haven't completed my entire study here. Following, we make some really different biological observation. I tell you that. Right after the ones I said that, yeah, there are some special thing. You know, the sun tend to, Eugene tend to lost neutron, lost stop codon, whatever, one or two. But so that in facing that part, the most biologically interesting interpretation that this gene is functioning that they couldn't stop properly, they couldn't turn it properly, the first one. But this one, then when I think about possibility that, well, you're looking at their alignment of gene against the parental gene, well, most of them are really subject to strong kind of negative selection. If they are pseudogene, what you just proposed that no deletion stretching could also happen in the inside reading frame, and also there could be change reading frame, not only three, or there should be four or five, but we don't see that. So I try to see that compare this data to the data of star codon lost, we had to have a kind of interpretation to reconcile the messages and the two things you may be doing alignment is true. So then eventually I remind myself after we get this conclusion that by this data here that those genes are functional. But looking at genes not killed until the gene could be not functional, how do you reconcile that? So eventually I recall what we found in the Jinwei gene. There, Jinwei gene, I didn't tell you that. During evolution, GOG also lost their stop codon. That's why in the early day when people observed that gene, they believed GOG was a pseudogene. But eventually looking at that, not because pseudogene, because the GOG they recruited the nearby exon intron, they acquired new stop codon 5' sign, then they continue and entrenched them. So in that way, I suggest that they only want to interpret.
To get back to your question, I suppose it is interesting. You can look at other codons, but if you just look at the start codon or just the stop, what are the percentage of insertions or deletions that are 1, 2, 3, mod 3 versus mod 2 versus mod 1?
Yeah. So, I mean,
you see, we're just looking at this special class that cleanly take out 3. That's a special class of deletions.
Well, I need to tell you that what we Richard did, what we did. So I think the most likely possibility we test is that what we did is that. Is that, well, the species there, there is the. So far we observe a ratio of the genes. There, they should have ATG, they should have stop codon GTA or whatever is there. So they should, if this one delete, this one deleted, they can borrow Stop-Tuton from nearby Exxon. Previously, they're already there. They have some functional load there. So in that way, they can still simplify a functional gene there. Oh, such a gene can become chimeric gene for sure. That is what follows what we learn from gene reaching. If Stop-Tuton is in there, then if this is Stop-Tuton deleted, doesn't matter. They can also borrow some downstream Exxon to form standard chimeric structure. So that is the assumption I made. Then
why is it in a different exon rather than just in the untranslated
thing? Oh, well, I said it's one of the two, one either. But this one, either bottom, either bottom, both. But the point is that they can get some like a functional genetic element, help them operate the codon. By doing that part, they can also give the gene a new function. So that, so I propose this, and then we go back to the lab, the bench. That means it is true. We should be predicting that. They borrow that, but petitions you that you do Behrman design primer from both sides, then you should be able to detect RNA from this gene, but the RNA is much longer than what was supposed to gene defined in both directions. Right? So this biologist, the Behrman can test this, and then we go back to the lab. It is true. Most of such a gene, they really borrow some exon sequence from both sides, i.e., most of these misfolded genes, actually, they are chimeric genes. They were not simply evolved from parental gene. They become hybrid genes. So that makes me excited because, as I mentioned, such a gene usually give you a lot more function, like this case. So this parental gene have one intron, then misfolded gene, they go in there. Then, so there, they lost, say, like, stop codon. Then now they recruited the downstream exon. There, they acquire a lot more stop codon to make them stop. So this is then we see a lot of cases. In this case, they borrow both exons from upstream region or recruited from downstream region. So there they get one new stop codon, one new stop codon in that case, and they compensate that. So we really see that. So total, so there's a lot of cases like this. And after this prediction was manual prediction, and you just see many, many genes that they recruit. So let's interpret that. There's short kind of selection, which were delete their stop codon, which would help the recruit a nearby intron exon to create a lot of function, the gene function and a total change. So with such a gene unit, once again, age is very young. So right now, we realize that there are about 380 families in the rice. Their age is very young, most of them about within 10 million years or so. They recruit new intron exon much more rapid than the Drosophila. What they try to see that the rice, in the recent evolution time, they get biologically a lot more chimeric gene, therefore, a lot more larval biological function to help them survive in nature. And I now came up, after we think about the genomic analysis in other genome, we get this kind of comparison. Then he's very low. And so that's per genome per million here, about 0.05 in kind of gene there. Then you go to the human, then you go to chickens, then that's about the realist about per million here per genome, about 0.1 kind of gene. Human being, we are much higher, significantly higher, we are about 14 kind of genes created by compare derived by Henry Kaisman. In Switzerland, he probably in PNS, so this is the reason. But you imagine the new chimeric gene we identified recently is about 7, the rice per million years. 7 is about 50 times higher than human. So when I compute this number, I was really surprised that if we believe chimeric gene is one of the efficient ways to bring larval biology to species, we have to believe that then the rice. They have a lot more functionality gene, which are created by chimeric gene, so 50 times higher. But this is really against our speculation before. We sort of, we human being, you know, we have brain, we have specific neuron system there, so our gene structure is the most complex of all people try to argue about it. But then we cannot reach the plan. It's just much more complex in terms of the functionality of gene structure than the mammal, than other organisms. So conclusion there.
I think that it's been suggested from early studies that at least a fraction of the chimerical genes were actually formed between genes that control the protein that are interacting. So let's say we have a heterodimer, which is an obligatory heterodimer, and sometimes
it's
do you think that it's also, I mean, this holds for this new data with very higher rates of critical
here they argue that when the gene can form kind of dimer, different kind of like structure that will add functionality too, right? So we don't know about that. I just like I said, we're in this level of complexity of changing the analyzed DOS or complex level map that we can be sure, right? So right now the problem that comes as well is there's a high proportion of technology in the plant, 50 times of human being, highest one compared to any kind of organism that the commission tried to draw. Is the plant different from what we believe? Say, plant is functionally similar than animal genome. I no longer believe that anymore based on this observation. It's very big. So right now the question becomes, why? Why like that? So I go to your problem. Why do grass genome? Because all the way analyze the rice, a lot of genes are out there also shared by the other grass species, right? We should ask the question, why do grass genome have so complicated protein diversity? Well, I agree with what you said, that dimer, hitter, that kind of stuff, that really is a future of vision. But when we talk about protein diversity, mean that the complexity of the protein, chimeric structure, to lead to so many new functions. We have no much idea, but I can have a working hypothesis. Can this high ordination rate, the highest observed so far in this level of complexity, can be attributed to the unusual diverse environment of the grass species at such an extent? Because I want to do that immediately. It might be that if you travel, like in Antarctic land, you see the grass. Grass is very easy to tell what is grass by the time structure. Then you go to Arctic, you know, this is ice, then you also see the grass there. You travel in Sahara desert, see the grass there. Then if you travel to the Cape Cod in Massachusetts beside the ocean, where Saudi America, you also see the grass there. So give me the impression that grass among the most diverse plant species in organism. Diverse means that they're also diverse in very different kind of environment. So that's like a working hypothesis that maybe that kind of selection would select for quickly the lack of functionality which is brought by chimeric gene created by that. Anyway, that's hypothesis we created. I think that's all I can talk about it. This is all the work did by many people in the lab and analyze it and leave more questions than what we are able to answer. It is good for the research. Yeah. All right. I think I can take some questions before I leave to the airport.
But another reason why plants might have a high genome complexity, high protein complexity, is that they cannot run away, and so they're subjected to the much more environmental changes. So if you have too much sun, you go to the shade, but the plant they cannot. So they have to adapt to variation in their living condition.
But pollen can, right?
What?
Their seeds in pollen. I mean not.
Yeah, but a plant
within one generation.
When it has been growing, I mean, then it has to be able to cope with very large variation in the environment, its micro environment.
Yeah, that is
animals,
obvious.
Or even microorganisms, they might actually run away from unfavorable environments. So
within the lifetime of one organism.
Yeah, yeah. So they have to have a large repertoire of tools to cope with the large variation in the local environment.
Yeah, and I think that's what most people are here. I think it's pointed to Marty.
or a simple observation. You can't do correlation, but when you look at the chicken genome, it has a least number of new retrograde gene or new gene, the chicken birds. But you're looking at the mammal, then it's higher. Then, you know, mammal probably cannot move so fast as the chicken, right? Then you go to the plant, they don't move at all. They have to deal with their own problem when they live in different environment. But it's too obvious, that's why I didn't say too obvious sometimes it might not be true, but this is the kind of correlation we see. So I tend to be confident on that direction. A lot of plant people, they read their paper, they understand, well, the plant is fixed. So they have to deal with by different more and more function. Just like, you know, as a human being, we can walk. If the environment is too hot, you migrate. But if you cannot move, or a creep will stay here, you need to be able to your own way to deal with the hot temperature. You know, that's very simple thing.
Hey, so I was wondering about the rice specifically. The rice was subject to artificial selection by humans. Could that have been the cause for new functions?
But did you actually see that when rice was domesticated about 10,000 years ago, most of the genes are older than that. Mm-hmm. That means domestication was not an issue.
But you fundamentally don't know how much of this might be absorbed by just differences in the fundamental mutation rate to retropose genes, whether it's just a lot more reverse transcribed RNA made in plants. And
yeah, that is, that I think that is the.
So I'm not saying that these are not sort of contributing to the adaptive evolution of species, because, as you say, if they have all these hallmark features of a functionalized chimeric gene, then they've been pulled in by some kind of adaptive process. But maybe it's actually just a much more common source of mutational variation in plants.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of more reverse transcriptase.
Yeah, that's right. This is you're sort of kind of at least the higher expression rate also participating into the base number, right? But if that's the case, what I don't understand is that if just duplication happens, that doesn't mean those genes have to be functional.
Right?
However, if retropagation happening in function, they can be selected very rapidly. So I sort of tend not to believe in terms of kind of mutation limited picture. I think about that. When you think about something that obvious kind of adaptive significance, but they have more like adaptive significance, I tend to believe from that direction.
So if you want to know the difference between animals and plants, why don't you just count all genes in plants and all genes in animals and count number of biochemical pathways and number of different tissue types or number of different ways of regulating genes, that kind of thing, about the whole genome, rather than specifically looking for the new ones?
I would love to do that if there's a good data about that kind of stuff. If you talk about like a pathway kind of structure, right now that most of it, I mean, every pathway was inferred, not really by a garbage, just because when people did the release, they inferred that can do happen in other plant or in other animal, whenever the gene there, so that you make the comparison not so easy, but still valid. That's what I'm trying to say.
Because that would have been on a much longer time scale, and it wouldn't be influenced by the dynamics of the mutation process. I mean, you're focusing on a rather small set of things that have just been created.
Yeah.
And that is probably a small part of the diversity that's in the genome already. Right?
What that question returns to, one is the consequence of this gene, other one is what the reason, where the mutation reason, right? You can cut into two different parts. Are there really mutation created process, or is there some certain kind of aggregate level of mutation, and after that, then selection is safe for it, for creating. So that type of dialogue, we have to say.
There's another difference as well. I mean, I don't know if this is true for all plants, but certainly in Arabidopsis, but certainly not the case for Drosophila. Typically, you can take any Arabidopsis gene and just include a few thousand bases upstream, and and that will always contain essentially the complete regulatory circuitry for the gene. They have relatively simpler, at least
structurally, it's back to the gene. Cis-regulatory architecture then, drosophila and, you know, vertebrate or mammalian. Because every time you get a retroposed gene, it has to pick up a regulatory, a promoter and regulatory sequences somewhere upstream. I mean, say in the case of drosophila, the typical gene is quite complicated. In the typical plant, it just, you know, seems like it's somewhat simpler. Maybe it's easier for a retroposed gene to pick up a regulatory sequence that allows it to be transcribed.
If the gene, they jump into the middle of some other gene, then that's the most convenient way to pick up the regulator sequence that so it can survive better. That's why he described how this happened, you know, such a high proportion of the gene that
that's maybe
all the people who don't plant molecular genetics. They find a gene and then, you know, they want to do Zakian or something. And they just take a couple thousand base pairs, 200 put it in, it always regulates, just like the native gene.
So I'm actually very interested in that question, right? Because what you're suggesting is that for let's say, if you take a fly, that for a large majority of genes, if you were to take just to stop immediately upstream of it, it wouldn't regulate in any sort of reasonable way, so that would be really a problem if you tried to put it somewhere else in the genome. But my understanding is that, and that might well be true for sort of these developmental, early developmental things and so on, but is it really the majority of genes? Because I also see fly people happily go and make a reporter by just sticking the promoter of the fly gene in front of GFP and then say, well, look, it's expressed here, it's expressed there, which sort of assumes that at least some majority of relevant stuff is immediately upstream. And there are many experimenters who do that, right? And they sort of implicitly assume that you can do it. So it's really not clear. I mean, are they just wrong? Or is it actually that for a large number of genes, you get a reasonable expression if you just take the immediate stuff?
There's no question there's some bias towards studying developmentally regulated gene, you know, where there may be more complex regulation.
Right. So,
but that's not the case for, like, you know, Maniotis did a lot of classic work on Drosophila ADH gene. There, ADH has quite complicated regulatory architecture and their sequences. I don't know, you have 8-10 kb upstream and downstream that are involved. But like the number of metabolic enzymes, things like that, you know, that have actually been studied, probably not too many.
Close is the expression to the topic.
Thank you. Well, thank everybody for the discussion.